Today is Wednesday, February 8th. We're going to be talking about EKGs and diastole and systole today. Last week we talked about EKGs. I know it's been a long time since we did this stuff, so I'd like to go back and review with you on EKGs. In your course pack, this is page 40. An EKG is a measurement of the heart's electrical activity, and the typical cardiac cycle is about 0.8 seconds long. If you're looking at a cardiac cycle of 0.8 seconds long, how many beats per minute is that? Yeah, about 75 beats per minute, and the range is from what to what?
60 to 100.
60 to 100, good. So we're looking at this EKG being a reflection of the heart's normal sinus rhythm, and the normal sinus rhythm involves an inbuilt nervous system called the intrinsic conduction system. When the SA node fires, that SA node sends a nerve impulse to the two atria, telling them to depolarize and then contract. There's a wave on this EKG that reflects atrial depolarization. Which wave is that? P wave, yeah, P wave represents atrial depolarization. So keep in mind, going back to BIO-210, depolarization means we're preparing to contract. The actual atrial contraction is hidden behind what? Good, QRS, good. Okay, so let's start from the beginning. The intrinsic conduction system is what's responsible for these waves here. The firing of the SA node sends a message to the two atria, telling them to depolarize. That shows up as a P wave. Now, we know that after depolarization, the atria contract. That contraction is hidden behind the QRS wave. That's it for the atria, okay? And then we have a space here between P and Q. Looks like a flat line, but that's in fact the time period when the nerve impulse now reaches your AV node. Your AV node now fires off an impulse that travels to the junction or bundle of His, down the bundle branches, up the walls of the two ventricles and into the Purkinje fibers. Now your ventricles receive a message telling them to depolarize, that represented by what waves?
QRS,
right. So the QRS wave is a massive wave. Why is it so much bigger than the P wave? Good. A lot of muscle in those ventricles. There's more myocardium there. So the depolarization event is a greater event in terms of size of those waves. So QRS wave represents ventricular depolarization. Well, you actually don't see a wave for ventricular contraction. They contract at some point after this S wave. There's a flat line there. That's pretty much where we would expect to see the ventricles eject their blood. Through the aorta and what? Pulmonary trunk, yeah. And then finally, this T wave represents the ventricles resetting themselves. What's the word that means that they are resetting back to a resting state?
Repolarization,
right. Now, some of these pictures do in fact show a U wave. That U wave should represent papillary muscle repolarization, but that's the only time I'm going to mention it. I just wanted to share it with you in case you saw it, and it happens to be on this picture. So how long is this? Go ahead, Natalie. Sure. That one? Sure. So how long is this whole cardiac cycle?
0.8
seconds. Good. And you're not seeing actual contractions here. Instead, you see depolarizations and repolarizations. Which chamber is depolarized first? Atria, good. QRS wave is depolarization of ventricles, good. And T wave is ventricles doing what?
Repolarizing,
good. Is this starting to come back a little bit?
Okay. Can you repeat that one more time?
Sure.
While the atria depolarizes and then the Q, what was QRS?
QRS, that's ventricular depolarization.
Okay. And what was the last one?
The last one is T wave, and that is ventricular repolarization.
Okay.
good? Okay, anybody else need the slide? I just want to remind you what we talked about last Wednesday. If EKG paper or graph is shown behind the EKG, that paper or graph is supposed to represent the time passage for the waves. Big blocks, like this one here, are supposed to represent 0.2 seconds. The tiny, tiny blocks are actually 0.04 seconds. I'm not going to think in terms of those tiny, tiny blocks, but we are going to pay attention to those big blocks because we're going to watch the timing between waves. If you want to know the distance between two heartbeats, at the very bottom of your page, measure from R peak to the next R peak, okay? So let's keep that in mind when we talk about problematic EKGs. Let me take you on over to page 41. So this is certainly a problematic EKG. This is called asystole, meaning no contraction of the heart, and otherwise it's called a flat line. This means that the SA node is not firing, the AV node is not firing, and basically you have to do one of two things to get the heart restarted. You have to crank it up with a shot of epinephrine, or you have to do some type of heart massage. So if open heart surgery is occurring, the surgeon can actually take his or her hand and massage the heart and manually pump blood. But, you know, this is a case where we have to induce some kind of electrical activity by either EKG or getting that heart to restart its electrical activity. We do know that the brain will die within 5 minutes, so 15 minutes is far and clear beyond brain not receiving oxygen. So after 15 minutes, clinical death can be called. So, do you notice a little bit of waviness to the asystole wave up here? It's not totally flatlined, right? So if a patient is hooked up to an EKG and that person is moved, you know, if the bed is jostled, if the stretcher is jostled, whatever is moved slightly, that can induce a little bit of wave activity, and that can actually make it look like there is some electrical stuff going on. In reality, if your skeletal muscles are moved, they too can produce waves that look just like this. So I just wanted you to know that if a patient's being jostled or moved, maybe riding the ambulance, for instance, it can mirror image what we would expect to see in terms of wave activity, although that's not very much there. All right, so take a moment and let's find an R wave peak. Right here's one. The next R wave peak is quite a far distance away. So if you take a look at the R wave peak and count big boxes, that's 0.2, 0.4, 0.6, 0.8, 1 second. I'm just going to estimate about 2, about 3, about 4, about 5 seconds apart. That's a big distance. What should normally the distance and time be? 0.8 seconds. You're looking at 5 seconds between contractions of the ventricles. So you're talking about what, maybe 20 heartbeats a minute? So this is what we call heart block. It's a third degree heart block, and you'll notice that the SA node impulse may be firing to the atria, but it never makes it to the ventricles. So what is the next major stopping point after the SA node? AV, yeah. So the AV node may not be getting the message. That means no impulse is fired down the bundle of His, bundle branches, Purkinje fibers, and the ventricles might just be sitting there waiting to be told what to do. All right, 5 seconds is a long time. How long does it take for blood to fully clot? 3 to 5 minutes, right? It can do a pretty good job starting in 5 seconds. So if you let the heart sit for 5 seconds without any movement of that blood, we do see coagulation starting to take place. So that's really bad for strokes and throwing off clots to other places. So block means that we're not able to get the impulse down to the ventricles, and so we do not see the heart beating more than, say, maybe 30 to 45 beats per minute. This one's called ventricular tachycardia. Before you even read anything about it, what is tachycardia?
Fast
heart rate, right. And why are we specifying ventricular?
Ventricles.
The ventricles are responsible, right? So normally the ventricle should listen to the AV node. And who should the AV node listen to? SA node, right. Now, there are cases where there are pieces of nervous tissue that decide to be the winner, and they set the heart rate faster than the normal SA node should set it. And that may be the case here. The SA node is just not in control. It could be an extra piece of nervous tissue that has stepped up and said, hey, I'm going to be the winner, and I get to set the pace. Or it could be something like epinephrine that's causing an increase in that heart rate. Take a look. We can count the rhythm here. This is the peak of our R wave. There's a 2.2 second box. That's 0.4 seconds between peaks of the waves. This is double time. So what do you estimate the heart rate to be? 120, 150, yeah. Normal heart rate should be between what and what? 60 and 100. So this definitely qualifies as tachycardia. You can't see P waves, you don't see T waves here. All you see are these jackknife QRS spikes back and forth. So VTAC can lead to ventricular fibrillation. It can lead to the heart electrical activity ceasing completely. That's asystole, and even death. So if you're running, this may in fact be what you have. Because if you're exercising, you're getting your heart rate up, you may experience this, but that is something that's controlled. This is simply sitting at rest, and all of a sudden your heart decides to take off and go 1,000 beats a minute, you know, 100, 200 beats per minute. All right, this is ventricular fibrillation, or VFib. Can you locate a T wave? QRS wave? T wave? Nah, it's almost impossible to locate any of those waves. This looks like a mess, and in fact it is. That's because the ventricles are not contracting together as a unit. They're fibrillated, which means they're kind of like quivering. If they're quivering and they're not providing full-blown contractions, does blood get out into your systemic circulation? Nope. So this is arrhythmia. This is when the use of cardioversion, that's shocking with the paddles, could be beneficial. A defibrillator, like those in the shopping malls, would be useful for someone who is experiencing fibrillation. So those machines are marked as AEDs, automatic defibrillator devices, and of course that machine will check to make sure that there is an abnormal sinus rhythm before it shocks the patient back into normal sinus rhythm. So that's the good news, because I don't know if I want just Joe Blow in the mall giving me a cardioversion shock. So at least the machine is smart enough to test to see if you've got normal sinus rhythm. So if we were to shock someone with cardioversion, where are we trying to restore control in the heart? SA node. Yeah, we're trying to get control back to the SA node. These are less life-threatening than, say, those ventricular issues, but they can still cause massive problems. So I don't mean to imply that these are not life-threatening. You know, you could walk around with an atrial problem and not really know it and have it for weeks before it actually causes a life-threatening issue. Those ventricular problems may cause life-threatening issues in the next 5 minutes. This may be something you can drift around with for a few weeks and not know you've got. In atrial flutter, it's kind of like a quivering once again. The atria are fluttering like butterfly wings. And that means that they're not fully contracting and sending blood where? To the ventricles, yeah. So unfortunately, that means blood is not fully being injected to the ventricles, which then should send it out to the body and the lungs. The problem with this is it can become something called atrial fibrillation. Did you catch something here? The QRS spikes are down. Here they're up. Okay, it may just be where the electrodes are placed. That may be the only difference between those two. It may not really be a significant issue. But let's take a look now. Here's your R spike. There's 0.2, 0.4, 0.6. 0.2, 0.4, 0.6, 0.8. Okay, so there's 0.6 second cycle, a 0.8 second cycle. This is about a 1.2 second cycle, a 0.6, a 0.8. A 0.6. What's happening to our rhythm? It's fast, it's slow, it's back and forth, right? It's not regular, it's not routine. So So if your rhythm is not routine, what happens to the blood in the ventricles? Can you pump it out? No. So the problem is we may get an injection of blood really quick. We may let more blood accumulate. 2 seconds later, we may inject. So you're getting an irregular amount of blood being injected out into systemic circulation. So the irregularity here is what the problem is really seated with AFib. And you may walk around not having any idea you've got this. So what symptoms do you think you might experience, if any? Sometimes my brain gets blood, sometimes it doesn't. Lightheadedness, dizziness, okay? That may be all you get in terms of symptoms. Now, when you finally throw a clot somewhere, that's when you start really seeing issues, right? So why might a clot be thrown with AFib?
If there's a really long time between R waves.
Yeah, long time between R waves. The longer that blood sits, the more chance you have of a clot forming. So yeah, that's the problem here. So people with AFib often are asymptomatic. They may have had a heart attack and damaged the heart muscle tissue. And the problem is, unless they're watched for this, they may not have any problems until they throw a clot. Maybe they have a TIA, which is a lead up to a stroke. They may have a heart attack, a pulmonary embolism. So they can be put on an anticoagulant. Why would that benefit somebody with AFib? Makes it less viscous, inhibits clotting, and so of course, if you sit for a while before the clot or the blood is ejected, there's less likely to be a clot in there. The interesting thing about AFib is people who have this may fall in and out of AFib and not even know it. You know, if they're in AFib, then they can have cardioversion, the paddles that shock you back into rhythm, and then they may go home and be fine for weeks or months. Something as simple as sneezing can send somebody who goes in and out of AFib back into AFib. Vomiting or diarrhea may give them enough of an electrolyte imbalance to push them back into AFib. So this is kind of a silent issue, especially for populations who have had heart issues like heart attacks. So it's certainly something to be watchful for. One thing I would look for is the distance between R waves and then this clutter mess in between the R waves. What do you think is happening in between R waves? Who's trying to get things going?
SA
node, yes. So you may actually see some P waves in here where we're trying to get the blood to move and that message to go down to that AV node. Okay, so the thing to know for the test is to be able to recognize these as irregular heartbeats or irregular contractions. These are not normal sinus rhythms. What is one thing you can do to confirm that this is not a normal sinus rhythm? Count your R waves, right? Those R peaks should come how often?
Every 0.8 seconds.
Every 0.8 seconds, right? So if you're getting irregulars or if they're getting too close together, then you know you've got an irregular sinus rhythm of some sort. Okay. Do you have any questions on these? Why don't we talk through diastole and systole? That comes next on page 42 and 43. I am glad you're here today to hear this. This is like storytelling. And I'm going to repeat it about 10 times so that when you leave here, you're going to have this story floating in your head. If you let your mind wander later today, I hope it drifts back to this story. If you wake up in the morning thinking about diastole and systole, that's great because that means it's getting stuck there in the brain cells. Okay, so first thing I want to do is define terms for you. The term diastole or diastole means relaxation. Systole or systole means contraction. Diastole means relaxation and systole means contraction. Now, to be specific, there is such a thing as atrial diastole and atrial systole, but we have to specify if we mean those two chambers. We also can be very specific and say ventricular diastole and ventricular systole, but since the ventricles are the main pumping chambers of the heart, when we simply say diastole and systole, we really mean the ventricles. So it's just being lazy, that's all it is. People have just dropped saying specifically atrial or ventricular. They just say diastole and systole and assume you, the listener, knows that they mean what the ventricles are doing. So if I say diastole, your assumption is ventricles are what? Relaxed, right? And if I say ventricular, or if I say systole, you assume the ventricles are contracting, right? So that's just the catch with understanding how these two terms work. Anybody need this slide? So I know that all of us have probably had our blood pressure taken at some point, and we're given numbers like 120 over 80. Those pressure readings are measured in millimeters mercury. That's the mmHg. And that is the distance or height a column of mercury may be raised by the pressure of your blood. Okay, so the top number is our systolic pressure. That is ventricular contraction. That's typically somewhere in the neighborhood of 120 millimeters mercury. The bottom number is our diastolic pressure. What does that mean the ventricles are doing?
Relaxing,
right. So top number, ventricles contract, that's systolic pressure. Bottom number, ventricles relax, that's diastolic pressure. Correct. Always be like that, right? So the American Heart Association says that your number should be around 120 over 80 or lower. Ideally, your systolic pressure should be between 110 and 120, according to the American Heart Association. And your diastolic number should be between around 70 and 80 on the bottom side there. They say the lower, the better in terms of those numbers. I don't mean like 20 over 0 is good. What I mean to say is 110 over 70, they say at the American Heart Association, is better than 120 over 80. That the more work your heart has to do, the more pressure it has to deal with, the harder it works and the more easily it can get worn out. You'll notice on the top of your page there that hypertensive numbers are over what? Hypertensive numbers. Over 140 for systole and over 90, yeah, for diastole. So 140 over 90 is technically into the hypertensive range or high blood pressure range. So if you're somewhere between 120 and 140, they technically say at the American Heart Association that that is into pre-hypertensive numbers. Of these two numbers, which one is vitally important for knowing that blood is being pumped from your heart?
Systolic.
Yeah, systolic, that top number. If the bottom number is a little bit low, all that means is blood is probably not getting pumped efficiently from atria to where?
Ventricles,
right. But the top number, that systolic number, tells us if blood is effectively being pumped from your ventricles out through aorta and pulmonary trunk. So that top number is really the most important number because it tells us that the blood is effectively being pumped out of those two ventricles. Are you so far so good? Do you have any questions so far?
What did you say was?
The bottom number?
Yeah.
Bottom number is diastole, and that is nothing more than atria pumping blood to ventricles. The ventricles are relaxed. Yeah, and I normally give you numbers, and I'll say pick out the normal blood pressure, and so you would want to avoid pre-hypertensive or hypertensive numbers. So I'd probably give you something like 115 over 75, because that falls right in what the AHA says is good. The bottom number is less important, but the American Heart Association says it should be around 70 to 80. If you're falling below, I believe it's 60, you're looking at like hypotension. So like 90 over 60, top and bottom numbers there would be hypotension or low blood pressure.
And 120 over 80 is just right near the end of normal.
Right, that's at the top end of normal. That's right. So you actually know part of the story already. I'm going to start you in a time period here of diastole. Diastole means ventricles are doing what? They're relaxed. Good. Okay, so since the ventricles are relaxed, we know that blood right now is going to be entering into the right atrium from three veins. What are they? Good. Superior vena cava, inferior vena cava, coronary sinus. Now, is that blood oxygenated or deoxygenated?
Deoxygenated.
Yeah. Deoxygenated, good. At the very same time, blood comes into your left ventricle from what four veins?
Pulmonary
veins, good. That is oxygenated blood. So blood is draining in passively under low pressure right now. About that time, the SA node fires an impulse. And the impulse tells the two atria to depolarize, P wave, right? And then now what do they do next?
Contract.
They contract. So when they contract, they push blood through open AV valves. Tricuspid and bicuspid are currently hanging open. Blood now comes down into the ventricles, and the blood is going to stretch the walls of the ventricles. Keep in mind, diastole means relaxation of the ventricles. So we haven't yet talked about the ventricles contracting. Right now, they're just stretching as their walls fill up with blood. Let's put a pause button on the story right now. Each ventricle has received a volume of blood called the end diastolic volume. This volume is also called EDV for short, and it's otherwise known as the volume filling each ventricle, about 70 milliliters of blood. So each ventricle right now holds about 70 milliliters of blood. That's EDV for short. What's that? Oh, sorry. Yes, 120. I'm thinking about stroke volume. Thank you for telling me that. Yep. Okay, so each ventricle holds 120 mils of blood. That's a lot to stretch the walls. And about this time, the nerve impulse from the SA node has now reached your AV node. And so tell me where we go from there.
AV node to the QRS.
Yep, QRS wave shows up. Good. Good. That message travels down the interventricular septum, Purkinje fibers. They start to contract, that's ventricular depolarization, that's QRS wave, right? And then they start to contract. So about this time, your ventricles are full of blood, the pressure is rising, the pressure is so great that we slam shut our two AV valves. If you pause right now, all four heart valves are closed, right? We haven't yet opened the semilunar valve, so all four heart valves are closed. If you check on your worksheet, that is called the isovolumetric contraction phase. We're getting ready to contract, and it's a very brief time period where all four heart valves are currently closed. When those ventricles contract, we are in what's called ventricular systole, meaning we're in full-blown contraction. The pressure is now 120 millimeters mercury. It is with great force that we push through these two semilunar valves, and now blood is ejected from the heart. So let's take one at a time. From the right ventricle, where does blood go next?
To the
Good. Pulmonary semilunar, pulmonary trunk, pulmonary arteries. Where are we going?
Lungs.
Lungs, good. And from the left ventricle, we go through the
aorta, semilunar valve, to the body.
Good. So aortic semilunar valve to the aorta, and then out to the body. So that pressure has to be great enough to push the blood up and through those two large arteries, opening up those two valves, and the amount of blood ejected from each ventricle now is 70 milliliters. That is a volume called what? Stroke volume. Yeah, the blood pumped out or stroked out of each ventricle, that is called the stroke volume. So about 70 milliliters of blood. What you're left with in each ventricle is only a small amount of blood. If you started with 120 at the end of diastole and you pumped out 70, what are you left with? ESV and about 50 mils of blood. In terms of these blood volumes, when blood comes into the two atria, it drains through open AV valves. That blood collects in the two ventricles, and about that time, the SA node fires an impulse. What chambers contract in response?
Atria.
Atria, good. That is going to pump blood from each atrium down into each ventricle, and that volume of blood is what we call the end diastolic volume, or about 120 milliliters of blood.
You're saying that's when the atriums contract, and just the volume of blood inside the atriums are going to the ventricles?
That's correct.
That's the
EDV? Yeah, that's right. All right, so about that time, the AV node gets the nerve impulse. The AV node sends a message down the bundle of His, to the bundle branches, to the Purkinje fibers, and then what happens?
Fires the impulse and the ventricles contract.
Good. We now get a nerve impulse to the ventricles contract, and each ventricle pumps out how much blood? 70 milliliters. Good. So each one is going to pump out. That didn't show up very well, but hopefully you can see it. Each ventricle pumps out 70 milliliters of blood. That volume is called what? Stroke volume. Good. If you do the math, what we're left with is only about 50 milliliters of blood sitting in each ventricle, and we're just going to take those two numbers and subtract them. Okay, so here's where I don't want you to go with this. I pump out 70 and I get back in 120. Why don't I just keep adding more and more blood back into the heart? In reality, you pump out 70, 70 drains back in, and it joins the 50 that's currently sitting in the ventricle, and that gives you 120. You pump out 70, that leaves 50 sitting behind, that 70 mils circulates around your body, and then it comes back into the atria, rejoins the 50 that's sitting in the ventricle. So I know the common thing is to think, well, if I started with 120 and I pumped out 70, why don't I just keep adding and adding and getting this greater volume? But it's that you're really just circulating 70 mils of blood at a time. In reality, you've got about 5 liters of blood all throughout your body in circulation, and just a small amount sitting there in your heart going through this process. Does that make sense? Let's do it one more time from the top, and then we'll keep adding to the story. Let's start with late diastole. This is the resting period. So we know that blood drains into the right atrium from three veins. They are? Good. SVC, IVC, coronary sinus. And oxygenated blood enters the left atrium from?
Pulmonary
veins. Good. Simultaneously, blood goes down through two valves. What are they?
AV
valves. Good. Are they currently open or closed? They're open. Good. Got to be open for the blood to flow through. And each ventricle receives about how much blood at the end of diastole? 120. Good. So the SA node fires, the atria contract, the blood we end up with in each ventricle is called end diastolic volume. That's about 120 milliliters of blood. And then the nerve impulse reaches your bundle of His sitting here at the top of your, interventricular septum. And that splits and travels down your bundle branches into the Purkinje fibers. When your ventricles begin to contract, the pressure increases to about 120 milliliters mercury. And that pressure is so great that we slam shut which valves? AV valves. Good. Just to kind of tie this all together, you know those papillary muscles that stick up? What do they anchor?
Chordae
tendineae, right. And when you contract a ventricle, those papillary muscles pull down, they yank shut those AV valves. Those AV valves slam shut. And that's actually one of our heart sounds. That longer lub sound that we hear with heart contraction comes from those AV valves slamming shut. The pressure, though, is so great that you have to force open something, and you now force open your two semilunar valves. They're like trapdoors, and so how much blood is ejected through each semilunar valve? 70 milliliters, good. And that's a volume called?
Stroke
volume, good. So you stroke out of each ventricle about 70 mils, leaving behind how much blood? 50 mils, good. And that volume left behind is called end systolic volume. Good. So we end up leaving about 50 mils behind. We're going to get 70 more when the next cycle comes about. Okay. I want to tell you about something on the bottom of your page called ejection fraction, or EF for short. You notice the fraction of blood is about 70 mils out of 120 that you're pumping out. If you divide 70 over 120, okay, that's a little more than 50%, right? We don't even have to pull out a calculator to know that 70 is a little more than half the blood being pumped out if you're starting with 120. So the fraction that you're pumping out is somewhere in the 55 to 65% range. And that's actually an efficient heart. You know, normally if you're getting a 55 to a 65% for your efficiency, you think, hey, that's not very good. But for heart contraction, that's what we're looking for, is the fraction of blood being ejected being around 55, 65%. So that is actually considered mostly normal. If your ejection fraction is somewhere in the 30% range, what does that tell you about your stroke volume? Not pumping out, it's too low, right? Because normal stroke volume should be like, what, 70? So if you're pumping out 30 milliliters and your ejection fraction is somewhere in the 30, 40% range, what do we know is happening to your cells and tissues? Right, not get enough oxygen, right? So if this is a patient that has heart trouble, for instance, what kind of symptoms might they have?
Fatigue.
Right. So we have fatigue, we may have dizziness, lightheadedness, we may have trouble getting oxygen to our cells and tissues, and certainly the brain's an important one of those. Okay. You so far so good? Let's do it from the top. We're going to start with blood entering into the right atrium from the SVC, IVC, coronary sinus. And from the left atrium, we get blood from where? Pulmonary veins. Good. Which side is oxygenated?
Left
side. Good. Blood drains simultaneously down through open valves. Are they AV or semilunar?
AV.
AB, good. Blood now drains into your ventricles, and about this time, your SA node is fired. It tells both atria to do what?
Contract.
Good. So the blood volume in each ventricle at the end of diastole is how much? 120. Good. That volume is known as? End diastolic. Yeah, good. EDV or end diastolic. Good. About that time, the AV node now gets the message. The AV node sends the message down the bundle, the branches, and to the Purkinje fibers. And this is going to release acetylcholine onto those ventricle muscle walls, and they now depolarize and contract. Pause right now, because you just slammed shut which valves? AV valves. And you have a time period where all four heart valves are closed, known as? Contraction phase. Yeah, iso meaning same, biometric volume. And of course, this isobiometric contraction phase occurs during contraction. If we were to measure the pressure of the blood coming out of your ventricles, it would be around what?
About 120, yeah.
So right now, when we're measuring the pressure of blood being pumped out of these two ventricles, it's going to be pretty high, around 110, 120 millimeters mercury pressure. So the pressure is so great that it forces open your two semilunars, good. And of course, that blood goes through the aorta and the pulmonary trunk. We're out for pulmonary circuit and systemic circuit right now. So what is the volume of blood that we just pumped out each ventricle? 70 milliliters, good. Leaving behind how much? 50 milliliters. That volume is known as? End systolic, right, because you're now at the end of systole, and systole means?
Contraction.
Good. Okay. Could you tell the story yet? Okay. So, take you over to the next page. Got a little tab at the top to finish there for you. After the blood is ejected from the heart, you're now at the top of page 42 or 43. Those semiliters only stay open when blood is forcing them open, so they slam shut. And they actually make our second heart sound, which is a shorter, quicker dup heart sound. And some people say that the heart sound, that lub dup, that we associate with heartbeats, is actually the closure of the valve and then blood kind of turbulating up against that closed valve. So if you've got a stethoscope, you not only can hear the valve closures, but you may in fact be able to hear that swishing noise of blood kind of turbulating against that closed valve. Now, once again, all four heart valves are closed, and this time period is called the isobiometric relaxation phase. We are now going back into diastole. Blood is still draining passively back into the two atria, and we're back full circle to where we started. Okay, so we're now back to ventricular diastole, blood draining into the two atria, and the story starts once again from the top. One more time, or do you feel pretty good? Sure. Okay, so let's start here with ventricular systole. Let's start with blood being pumped out of each ventricle. How much blood leaves each ventricle? That is a volume known as?
Stroke
volume, good. That leaves behind how much blood in each ventricle? 50 milliliters, and that volume is known as? End systolic volume, good. Okay, so as blood is being pumped out, it's under high pressure, about 120 millimeters mercury of pressure. Hey, don't confuse 120 millimeters mercury with the volume, because there's a lot of volumes going on here. Okay, so when you pump the blood out, it's forcing open these two semilunar valves, and then after the blood is exiting, those valves have no reason to stay open. So they'll slam shut, producing a short, quick sound, a dup noise, And that duck noise means that we've now got our second heart sound. Okay? Now, pause. All four heart valves are currently closed. This again is another isobiometric phase, but because we're relaxing, it's relaxation. Good. Okay. So after those valves relax, the AVs open once again, and then we're back to business from the very beginning of the story once, you know, one more time. Do you need to hear this from the top? Okay. We're going to start you in mid to late diastole. This is a time period when the ventricles are relaxed. Blood is draining passively under low pressure into the two atria. Into the right atrium, we receive blood from SVC, IVC, and? Good. Oxygenated or deoxygenated? Deoxygenated. Good. The left atrium receives blood from? Pulmonary veins. Good. Oxygenated or deoxygenated? Oxygenated. So both chambers get blood at the very same time. These AV valves are open, so it dribbles down here to the ventricles. About that time, the SA node fires an impulse telling what chambers to contract? Atria. Yeah. So the pressure right now is around 70 to 80 millimeters mercury. It's low pressure. And we only need a little bit to help push that blood through these two open valves and into the ventricles. Pause. How much blood is in each ventricle? 120 milliliters. Good. That volume is called? EDV. Good. End-diastolic volume. Good. The message now comes to the systolic picture here, comes to the AV node. It fires an impulse to the bundle of His. Splits into the branches, travels the walls with the Purkinje fibers. What message do we tell those ventricles? Contract, right. So now you have ventricular systole. The pressure here is what? 120 millimeters mercury, good. The pressure is so great that you force shut all four valves. In fact, your AVs are pulled shut by those chordae tendineae, and you have not yet forced open your two semilunar valves. So this is isobiometric contraction phase. How much blood do you eventually force out through those two valves? 70 milliliters, good. That volume is called? Stroke volume, good. How much left in each ventricle? That is known as? End-systolic volume, good. So, blood leaves out through the aorta to the systemic circuit. Blood leaves through the pulmonary trunk to the pulmonary circuit. And so right about now, there's no more pressure keeping those two semilunar valves open. So those two semilunar valves are now going to slam shut. The AV valves have not yet relaxed open. So all four heart valves are currently closed. This time period is called? Good, isobiometric relaxation phase. And so finally, the heart relaxes once again and you're back to the beginning. Those AV valves are now open for business. Blood is draining through as it comes to the two ventricles. Okay, so what is ejection fraction? The volume you pump out in relation to what's in the ventricles. And it's actually a pretty low percentage. It's around 50-65% in terms of normal numbers. So you're not looking at 100% efficiency here. You're looking at about 60% efficiency. Okay. Can you tell me two time periods when both heart valves, all four heart valves are closed? And contraction, good. Isobiometric relaxation, isobiometric contraction, good. Can you tell me when the pressure is highest, during diastole or during systole? Oh, you're second guessing yourself, right? Systole, yeah. You change your mind. Okay, so what is pressure during systole? 120, good. 120 millimeters mercury, good. What is the pressure during diastole? 70, 80, good. Now, I didn't mention this before, but do you think those pressures are left side or right side pressures?
Right side.
Which one?
Both pressures. They're left side pressures. Why?
The strongest side,
right? Most myocardium on that left side. Good. So let me take you to near the top of page 43. You'll notice it says right versus left side pressure differences. So those numbers, the pressures, 120 over 80, those are for the left side because that's the side of your heart that sends blood into a systemic circulation. You've got to have the strongest pressure on the left side. Notice the right side pressures are insanely low. Normal pressures for systole are 24 millimeters mercury. What a joke, right? And the diastolic pressure over there on the right side is only 8 millimeters mercury pressure. So when you get a reading that says 24 over 8, you think, my gosh, you're dead. No, that's good for the right side. Left side should be 120 over 80, 110 over 70.
So is that why they do the
on the left arm,
yeah.
That's part of the reason, and there's actually less branching pathways in terms of vessels to the left side.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've seen a question here, so.
Yeah, the pressure is highest on the left side, and there's actually one less branch going to the left arm than there is to the right arm.
Okay.
Okay, so to answer that question on your sheet, why we should use the left side, yeah, the pressure is highest coming off the left side of the heart, and there's actually one less branch in the arterial pathway going to the left side. There's one less branch in the arterial pathway. I had no idea it was time to go. Y'all stop me next time. I was just going to keep going, and we were just going to be here all afternoon. Y'all have a great weekend. I'll see you on Monday.
Mr. President.
Yeah.